Blog Talk Radio.
He worked his way, he started a dairy, Christopher Farms, which was later bought by Borden. He went to night school at Golden Gate College, as it was known then, was a YMCA. And he built a business, and he invested in the stock market until he learned, as he told me, that after 3 o'clock, the big boys go behind the scenes and rig the market. When he learned that, he took all of his money out of the stock market and invested it in real estate and banks. He says, they got to pay me. But what's important about Mayor Christopher is that he was a civic statesman. We don't see this hardly anymore, where a person, male or female, goes into public life, runs for office, gets elected, gets reelected, and they turn it into their private fiefdom and bring in, as we see today, agendas like pedophilia, pornography, prostitution, legalization of drugs. Some of these politicians who are in public office do not enforce the laws that are on the books, such as the laws for bicycles, motor vehicles, motorcycles. We are living in Northern California in an era of mayhem. Every day, somebody, practically every day, at least every week, somebody gets hit and run and even killed. A lot of hit and runs. People do not obey the rules of the road. They'll pull in front of you. Among the worst people are people who drive these SUVs, these Mercedes, BMWs, Porsches, Audis, Volvos, and of course there are these young women who for some reason seem that once they get behind the wheel, they turn into a bunch of Amazons, and they'll do things, they'll flip you off, and use the F word, all that, and pull in front of you suddenly. It's become not safe. It used to be that you took driver's training in school, in high school. We don't have that anymore. We need to bring it back. But I'm going to bring up George Christopher as he ran for, first he was on the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, which is the equivalent of a selectman or city council or alderman. And I did a series of interviews with him before, in the 10 years before his death. There was a video made, and I have to locate it in our archives. But anyway, he talks about the business of a city.
Bringing up the revenues in the place that could alleviate the burden in the outlying area, too.
on the small homeowner?
Well, on the small homeowners, because if we didn't have the redevelopment of Japantown, for instance, which I did, and the redevelopment of the other areas, the Golden Gateway, and also the garages that I built, which sustained the business element downtown. Otherwise, we'd have lost two or three of our major store operators. For instance, let's say, just contemplate for a minute what a disaster would be. Let's say if Macy's closed tomorrow. The destruction of that area itself would be reflected in every single home in San Francisco.
Like Cleveland was in the 70s.
Well, so you have to have a combination where the mayor has the goodwill and the confidence of the business community, the investing community. If those two elements don't work together, the city can be in trouble. I recall when I wanted to build the 5th and Mission garage, for instance, and I had, even then I had dissidents, even for that. And a group came in, they said, no, we're against it. There's a few houses down there, a few this and that, and we're against it. And one fellow got up and he said, the only reason you're doing this is because you want to help the Emporium and iMagnon and the City of Paris. And I was supposed to get up and deny that, you know. They thought I'd get up and deny it vehemently and say, no, that isn't what I'm doing it for. But I got up and I said, I want to say that you're absolutely right. That's just why I'm doing it, because I want to keep the Emporium and these other department stores active and prosperous, making money and paying taxes. And if we don't do this, we're going to lose them. Well, they were shocked that I agreed with them.
Now, that's helping the above structure. One of the major problems facing this city is deferred maintenance. And then, despite the fact that, you know, as you well know, the bonds seem to, we float them and we never know where they end up. Can you comment on that?
Well, deferred maintenance, I wish Harry Ross was still alive. He could tell you. Because when I went in, it's been a habit of mayors over the years, especially around election time.
Remember there.
You folks who are in the public realm, I say this to the newspapers and to the radio broadcasters and anybody who's involved, you have to be careful about the bond issues, because if the mayor does not pay attention to the deferred maintenance, then eventually what they do is the assets fall apart, and then they ask for a bond issue. Well, Harry Ross and I had an agreement. I would put in $18 million a year excess in the budget just for the deferred maintenance that had been eliminated in prior years, but still, in the meantime, keep up what's necessary for the present. But to catch up, and in 8 years, say I put in $160 million practically for deferred maintenance. And deferred maintenance is one of the best opportunities to avoid bond issues. Another thing, too, I never did at that time, was to take money out of the water department, Hetch Hetchy, and put it in the general fund. Today, they'll take $40, $50 million of the profits of the Hetch Hetchy project in the general fund. In the meantime, the general fund is accelerating. Well, here's what's going to happen someday. Someday, they're going to come with a bond issue and say, Hetch Hetchy water supply needs $100 or $200 million.
We're getting there.
We're getting there, yes. You see, this deferred maintenance is something that nobody sees. Nobody understands what it is. It's a hidden enemy. And if you don't keep up with it, you're going to be in trouble.
Well, I'm going to keep talking about it. One of my favorite subjects, as you know, the poor sailor who's in jail, is 3 years, no fresh air or sunlight. Mm-hmm. The kid, Steve Neri, the young sailor who's been accused of killing a politician, was connected to Hallinan. We brought it up before. But when you built that jail, it was a state-of-the-art jail at the time. I remember you mentioning that you had consulted with the breast prison experts, the FBI.
You mean the new...
Yeah, 850, Bryant, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well.
But at that time, you didn't expect people to stay there 2-3 years like they're doing right now, did you?
No. That was a kind of a temporary thing before they went to the higher element.
The big Q. Okay. What is the problem with San Bruno? That's always in the federal courts.
I don't know. You know, you're asking me questions that I'm not aware of. San Bruno, someday somebody will come along and say, we need another bond issue, too.
Right, Well, we've had bond issues, and it never seems to get physically rehabilitated.
Another thing, too, that will come up sometime in the next, I would say, 3 or 4 years, will be Laguna Honda Home. And this will be a disaster, because the more it deteriorates, the more you need to rehabilitate it. And Laguna Honda Home is a very vital necessity.
What would you say, of course, we didn't get to this one, our previous conversations, but the Muni. I've been to cities, as you have, all around the world, and this is one of the best laid out transportation systems, but one of the worst managed. What would you recommend that they do to get it running efficiently?
You see, the Muni today has more problems, and I hate to say this, but quite a bit of it is due to personnel. And the unions, and I have nothing against the unions because I worked with them. I never, in my private business, I was there 45 years, never had any trouble. I paid the top wages. I always had a very amicable relationship. But if you give somebody just a little leeway, and you're a little negligent, then these problems multiply. And for instance, this fellow Cruz that was running the Muni for several years, he's a fine man. I know him quite well. He's a gentleman. He's a fine man in every way. But if I were the mayor at the time when Willie Bond got in, I don't think I would have appointed him as general manager of the Muni. I would have searched around and found out who was available with transportation experience. And, you just can't pick somebody off the street just because you're a secretary, make a general manager out of them, and jump them for $50,000 a year up to $160,000.
I think he has an engineering degree.
What?
I think he has an engineering degree from Stanford.
Yeah, there are a lot of engineers, but they don't know how to run an
engine. Right.
Yeah, that's hardly... you need a streetcar operator. That's what you need.
Yeah.
Now we've got another situation where this Booz Allen is going to come in. They're engineers, too. But they've been getting some millions of dollars in the past for their opinions. Well, the opinions don't seem to work.
But they keep getting the millions.
But they keep getting the millions, yes.
One of the other problems I see in a city, and it's close to Rich Disco's in my heart, is the voter fraud. I see more and more voter fraud. I see more and more of it. I have access to the entire state's database through political consultants that I know, and I've seen things. I've even talked to some people who voted fraudulently. It seems that this city is becoming more and more balkanized. You know what I mean, especially coming from Greece, from that part. What can we do to bring this city together?
Well, that's a broad question. It calls for a broad answer.
You're a politician.
Yeah. But, getting back to what I said at the outset here, now, my memory goes back to the time when Angelo Rossi was defeated, and downtown at that time wanted to get somebody to take over the mayor's office. Nobody would run. Finally, what did they do? They got hold of Roger Lapham, eminent businessman, no expert. The story to him was, look, we know you don't know, you do not know how to run the city. We know that. We know that you're not a fiscal expert from the standpoint of running San Francisco. We want you to get in there and be a caretaker until something develops. Roger Lapham went in there. He had the clock running day by day. It was one day less. And he was just a caretaker. He didn't, but he bought the muni. He was able to arrange that. If nothing else, that was sufficient. But the climate today really is not the same as it was in those days. It was not, because that's one of the things I always held against George Riley when I ran against him. He had been appointed to the Board of Supervisors by Angelo Rossi, and yet he ran against Angelo Rossi for mayor.
That's gratitude.
One day he and I were talking, and he said, you don't seem to have any confidence in me. I said, well, no, George. I said, you've been on the Board of Equalization for a long time, and that's not my style. I said, but the only thing I would resent about you is that you ran against the man who appointed you to the Board of Supervisors. And I says, I don't like ingrates. That's complete ingratitude. Yeah.
The vilest weed.
Yeah.
Can we get to the lighter subject, back to Mrs. Khrushchev? Do you remember the episode when they came here?
We will bring that up come Wednesday, because this is going to be George Christopher month. He's a forgotten man in San Francisco's political history. And what's important is he was the last great, honest, and ethical mayor who had international prestige. Mayors that have succeeded Christopher were Jack Shelley, who was a drayman. That's a guy that ran a carriage. I guess you'd call him a pre-teamster. And I don't know what his problem was, but I know the doctor who treated him for alcoholism. In fact, he was my landlord, or his son was, excuse me. And Shelley's wife was dying of cancer, and the story goes, according to the political cognoscenti, that Shelley was having an affair with his secretary. After the wife died, he did marry the secretary and had a son, Kevin Shelley, who turned out to be a flake and was forced out of statewide office for political corruption. He's in well-deserved obscurity. Anyway, Shelley wanted to run for a second term, and people realized how bad he was. So his going-away present was he got the city's lobbyist position in Washington, D.C. Incidentally, that's where Kevin Shelley was born. Then after Shelley, there was Alioto. Alioto came in. This is amazing. Joe Alioto was a lawyer during World War II. I don't know how he evaded the draft or avoided it. And he did work for the Office of Price Administration in Washington. And he always had the cloud of connection to the mafia. Now, this is the in 1968, when he ran, he wanted to be the vice presidential nominee on the Democratic ticket, and everybody was appalled. They said, oh, there's mafia. Now, everybody I talked to who knew him very well said that he wasn't mafia, but he was always around when there was a mafia gathering, like Appalachian up in upstate New York, where the feds and New York state officials busted that infamous meeting of the mafia. And, of course, Look magazine wrote this article, which was written by Lance Bresson, who was the son of Rosalind Russell and Frederick Bresson, the great director. And there was another writer, I think his name was Anderson, I forgot. Anyway, that came out in 1969. Joe Alioto, then as mayor, realized his political career was finished. It was like Dracula being stabbed in his heart at midnight. He did sue Look magazine. He never disproved that he was not in any way connected to the mayor, but he put them out of business. But it's interesting because Lance Bresson later went on to NPR, Public Broadcasting, and the other writer got an ambassadorship. So life is funny. After Joe Alioto, it was supposed to be Moscone, Moscone ran. And he ran a voter fraud campaign to get in the office. He was connected to Jim Jones, the Reverend Jim Jones of Jonestown. And he ran against John Barbagelata, who was a conservative, a Republican who had worked for Pan Am. He was one of San Francisco's also last honest, ethical, and competent public servants. A civic statement in his own right. Anyway, Barbagelata was defeated. Moscone was elected, and Moscone then appointed Jim Jones the head of the Housing Authority, which, according to the people who were following the Housing Authority, which was beginning to fall into disrepair. Anything you wanted. It was a huge fencing operation from young boys, young girls, stolen goods, drugs, everything. And it got so bad that Jones had to flee San Francisco, and he ended up in Jonestown. We all know that story. And Moscone also, that same month in November, was also murdered, assassinated. Now, Moscone... Dianne Feinstein was she got elected on banning guns, and she was a housewife, the daughter of a doctor. She has two other sisters, I understand, don't talk to her and won't talk to her. Anyway, she was on the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, and she was president of the board. According to our sources, there was a promise made by her to Quentin Kopp, who was also on the board, that Dianne would support Quentin Kopp for the next mayor's opening. She, according to the sources, she double-crossed him, and she ran, and she got all this publicity after Moscone's murder, and she, the president of the Board of Supervisors in situations like that can succeed to the mayor's office under the new charter, but then there's an election, and that was the deal when the election came up. Anyway, she became mayor and ran for two terms. Now, what she did do was she brought the Democratic National Convention to San Francisco in 1984. She tried to run all the homeless out to San Jose and other parts of the United States and California. And also, she invited Queen Elizabeth here, and it was a disaster. There was it was a rainy January, I think it was, and the Queen went down to Reagan's Ranch, and a Secret Service agent was killed in a car accident. It was a real mess, but that was the highlight of Dianne Feinstein's mayoral career. And then Dianne had married a guy named Richard Blum, who was apparently went to Dartmouth, and he got involved in all kinds of real estate and finding investments, and I understand he is on the California Board of Regents for the University of California, which is under fire for tuition increases that the students feel are not justified. Anyway, after Dianne, Art Agnos, the people got fed up with Dianne and her middle of the road, as it was called, governing from the center. Then it became Art Agnos, who was a community organizer who came in here on the bus. He took the bus from Chicago, I understand. He was originally from Massachusetts, stopped in Chicago, and then took the Greyhound bus to San Francisco and became a social worker out here and worked, and then went to the state legislature. A lot of questions. There was an attempted assassination of Art Agnos. Zodiac was supposed to have shot Agnos, but missed, or not missed, but only wounded him. And, of course, there's a lot of stories about that. Anyway, Agnos decided to run for office as, quote, from the left, and he won. And he made all kinds of promises, which he then proceeded to break. And once he got into office, city contracts and federal funds and state funds were dispensed to people who supported him and gave him political campaign contributions as a long printed record on this. People got tired of Agnos, and then they decided what we need is to clean up the city, they hope. So then from the conservative side came Frank Jordan, who was police chief. And Art Agnos said, I wish I had fired him. But he didn't. Jordan slammed Agnos and called him, his administration, anything goes, and it's still anything goes with the successors of Agnos. Agnos did have one legitimate complaint, too. There were problems with the contract with the San Francisco SPCA, which had for 100 years the animal control contract, and they got tired of it and wanted the money but didn't want to do the work. In fact, the police got tired of getting calls to pick up pit bulls because the San Francisco SPCA wouldn't do it. So also the fact that they got tired of having their cars torn up or being put at risk picking up pit bulls because police are not animal control. So what had happened, it was an issue that I worked on with Marguerite Warren, David Fowler, and others, the health department and the police department, to set up a new animal control facility here in San Francisco, which has saved the city $250,000 a year since 1985, 86. Anyway, after people got tired of Frank Jordan got double-crossed by his political supporters, and they brought in Willie Brown, the kingfish from Sacramento, because Willie Brown had been term limited out. And, of course, the city was wide open. There were a lot of complaints about Willie Brown and the left and, you know, it's our turn and all of that. So Willie Brown then set up this guy, Gavin Newsom, whose father was a judge and a friend of Jerry Brown and the Gettys. And Newsom became mayor of San Francisco, and then he appointed the current guy who became mayor of San Francisco. It was a guy named Edwin Lee, who came here from Seattle, Washington, and went to law school, but nobody knows of any cases that he has tried or has won or was associated with. And there's a growing controversy with him now because San Francisco has become the sandbox for developers, yuppies, pedophiles, and a lot of other questionable activities that go on here. So this is where the city is. And the diplomats that I talk to, having worked in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, they don't want to be associated with, unless they have to be, with the mayor of San Francisco because of all the scandals and the filth. One of the things that went on in Willie Brown's administration was the notorious homosexual glory hole party, and also where there was satanic rites and sodomy with a scotch bottle that went on in May of 1997. Anyway, we will be back Wednesday with part two of our interview with George Christopher, and it's quite interesting. We'll talk about his when Christopher was mayor, a lot of diplomats wanted to come here. And we had Conrad Adenauer, we had General de Gaulle, kings, queens, prime ministers. We didn't have a pope, so. Anyway, we'll end with our usual politics and poker. We will be back Wednesday at 4 o'clock because we're on Christmas schedule. So we'll end with politics and poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Toss your five. Pony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight. Possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some kind of Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet up.
Politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. Need a game for two. poker? Which is more important?
Paratrays.
Bet 'em.
Little trays, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your mind.
I'll fold.
I'll fold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in. Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fanyachinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot!
Politics and poker, play for a pot, that's mediocre. Politics and poker, rubbing neck and neck. If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck. Politics and poker, politics and poker, makes the average
back Wednesday at 4 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. I hope I have the rest of my voice back. And go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmiCusVeritas YouTube. And we'll be back at 4 p.m. Stay safe.